This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 69. Today, CJ and I are going to talk about some of the latest news in the Microsoft Azure space, recorded live Wednesday, February the 25th, 2015. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Hey, hey, CJ, how's it going today?
G'day, mate. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I guess I'm completely overloaded with work right now. How about you?
Oh, God, tell me about it. Yeah, dude, I'm in the same boat. I am swamped. I'm a broken man right now.
I'm right there with you. I'm getting up at 4 o'clock every day this week to try and get stuff done, because I'm a morning person more than an afternoon or an evening person. My mental capacity is much sharper in the morning and dies off for some reason, right after I eat dinner. It's like, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm kind of the opposite, to be honest. I am a complete dunce in the morning, and then, but I'm happy to stay up as late as I like.
Sound exact opposite.
Keep going, but that's also a pitfall too, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're taking sleep out of the bank. You got to give it back at some point.
I totally hear you. I'm hitting, my wife had a stomach bug for a day earlier this week. And so she was already asleep. And I'm like, you know what? It's 9 o'clock the other night. I'm like, I'm done. The guy I'm working with is over on the West Coast. And he's like, yeah, you're already clocking in. It's only like 6 o'clock here. I'm like, I will be up when you are still up. Trust me. Yeah, I will get back up when you're still up working. And sure enough, he was sitting there working at about 1:30 in the morning, and all of a sudden I pop online. He's like, holy crap, you're right. I was getting ready to go to bed. I'm like, let's review what you checked in.
Yeah. It's like, that's cool. It's like you've got 24-hour support around the world.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm kind of got my head down working on a bunch of stuff for a conference I'm speaking at next week where I'll be honest, I already feel like you've seen The Matrix. And you know Neo when he's in the basketball court when like all the hundreds of agents are getting ready to attack him?
Yes.
Okay, so I feel like Neo going into a Google conference and all of the agents, I'm the one that everyone wants to go out and lynch because I'm the Microsoft developer. So I'm going crazy trying to get a bunch of stuff set up and everything, getting ready for that. And that'll be a
fun exercise.
It'll be a lot of fun, but I'm hoping, no promises, but I'm hoping I actually have a couple good interviews lined up with some people that are definitely will hold true to our compete view on our podcast.
Yeah, cool. That sounds really fun.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's good fun just kind of working my butt off and everything. But I did have one thing happen this week that was really cool. I had my Pluralsight course get published.
Yeah, I saw that. Congratulations.
Thank you. That was very cool. Or the first of five Office 365 API courses. So I'm really happy with that one because it's got a whole module in there on Azure AD and Office 365. And I walked through showing not only user plus app permissions and getting it all working with Fiddler and the browser and just kind of doing Rob Howard from Microsoft, he did it over at TechEd Europe last October. So I did it in the course, showed how to do the exact same thing with the .NET SDK, and then also showed how to do the app only permissions that just got released in Azure AD and the Exchange related 365 APIs. Just a few weeks ago, we actually had to delay the course getting shipped because we saw this get released. And I was like, I got to get that in.
Oh, well done. That's awesome.
Good fun stuff. What's new in your life?
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to the UK next week for a splash and dash trip for a couple of days for work, but it's a fun trip as well. So doing some customer visits there, and I can't really go into too much detail, but they're kind of right up my alley, so to speak. So although it is a business trip, it'll be fascinating to visit them and see how they work. So I'm heading off on Sunday for that. And other than that, we've got a ton of work going on for Build and Ignite, are the two biggies, big conferences coming up at the end of April and beginning of May. So we're really starting to knuckle down and gear up for that. That's a ton of work.
It sounds fun.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll all pay off on the day, right? It's a ton of work up front, and then you get there and it's like, excellent.
Now you get to sit there and get hammered by all the media asking all the questions and everything, right?
Yeah, exactly. If we've done our jobs right, that should be the easy bit.
Ah, cool deal.
So yeah, no, that's keeping me real busy.
Well, hey, you want to dive in and do some news here?
Yeah, sure. So this episode, we're just going to focus on some news. Last week, we had a bit of news and entertainment with the interview with Chris O'Brien. So we just thought we'd catch up on a few of the latest and greatest things happening in the Microsoft Cloud world. So the first one I've got is, last week, we touched on a new ISO standard that Office 365 was adopting called ISO 27018. And there was actually a wider announcement, not just about Office 365 in this regard, but also from Brad Smith, who's the General Counsel and Executive Vice President of Legal and Corporate Affairs at Microsoft. So he's the big legal guy at Microsoft. And he actually had a post on Microsoft's wider strategy or I guess adoption is probably a better word, for that ISO standard more broadly. And so there's a good post up on blogs.microsoft.com that we'll point to in the show notes, which points to the blog that Brad wrote about this ISO standard. And but basically, in a nutshell, you know, he's saying that it's not only just, you know, applicable to Office 365, but also to Microsoft Azure and Dynamics CRM Online as well for that standard. So we shortchanged ourselves last episode is what I'm kind of get to, and that there are more, you know, the other applicable cloud products that this applies to. And so in a nutshell, this ISO 27018 basically is an assurance to customers around privacy and protection of content. Things like making sure that you're in control of your own data, that you know what's happening with it, that it's strongly protected, that it won't be used and sold for other people for advertising and things. I think you touched on that last week. And that also that Microsoft will tell you about access requests from the government, which is obviously a hugely topical thing here in the US and in Europe as well, obviously, but big topic of discussion at the moment. So yeah, so it's not only just Office 365, but it's Azure as well as Dynamics CRM Online. So you can read up more of the nitty-gritty detail on the ISO standard and what it means and things, but basically in a nutshell, security and protection, knowing what's going on, protection of your content and your data won't be sold for advertising.
That's very cool. It's cool to see that it's an ISO standard that I guess it's probably definitely come about from all the security and concern, privacy concern that's been in the business for the last year or two, like with the NSA stuff and everything. So
yeah, and as I don't know much about this particular thing going on right now, but I heard on the tubes the other day that Microsoft got held in contempt of court or something like that in some case for failing to just hand over customer data or something along those lines, basically fighting for the rights of the end customer and not just handing it over.
Yeah, I think it was the one where they are the U.S. government was trying to get data on either an individual or a group of individuals where they had data that was in the Microsoft cloud, but it was in the Ireland data centers.
Oh, right.
And Microsoft said that we're not going to do it. And a bunch of other companies jumped in and they said that Microsoft said, you can hold us in contempt, but we will fight this one.
Yeah, gotcha. I haven't been following that closely, but I saw a headline and noticed that was going on.
It's the only one of the big cloud providers that has directly fought and been held in contempt for refusing an order of that. So that shows that, I mean, leading the way of the whole, you know, where the standards should be. So
it's going to be interesting the next year or two on this, right? Because these are things that are going to set precedent, you know, legal precedent in some cases, I'm imagining, mm-hmm. about how it's handled for the future. And so, you know, these are the first really important cases or really important precedents that'll be fascinating to watch.
That's pretty cool stuff.
How about you? What do you got next on the docket that you think is awesome that we should talk about?
Hey, you said docket, so why don't we say docker?
Ooh, I see what you did there.
This is the, there's another announcement here where this is the first Azure hosted service that runs exclusively on Linux that Microsoft is now offering to customers. So Docker is for people who aren't familiar with Docker, I'm going to get in the biggest nutshell I can possibly give you is that I would assume that our listeners are familiar with IaaS or at least virtual machines where you've got a full-blown physical machine, but it's all virtualized. What Docker is think about taking that concept and think about like scaling it down a little bit farther. So not a full-blown operating system, but more or less like a pre-canned configuration of a platform. So I could say like, really think mini VM is the best way to say it because you're going to have a tiny little operating system. But then you have things like, I want, you know, this installed on it. I want this version of Node, this version of the .NET framework, this version of this version of that. So you can pick little Docker containers. And when you go to install your app, your app goes into a container, and so you can spin up multiple containers to get hosted. And so it's a pretty popular thing that's taking hold in the cloud around places like AWS and with Google and with Microsoft as well. Microsoft is working with some vendors to actually build a Windows implementation of Docker, but right now it's hosted on Linux, which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, wow, that's a cool development. Yeah, I feel so lame in this regard, right? Like, I want to know everything, of course, and don't have the time in the day to figure all that stuff out, but I'd love to play with this.
It's, you know, this is a thread that I don't know if you were on this thread too, but it was somebody posted on Facebook a couple of weeks ago where they were just like, God, the pace of change is just going so fast. How in the world are you supposed to keep up with it? And, you know, I used to try to keep up with all this stuff, and now it's just I kind of just pay attention to the news that's going on. So I see the blurbs, but I don't go dive into it because you're not going to use everything. But it's cool to know what tools are available in the hardware store. I don't need to go buy every single one, though. I just need to know it's right there, and I know where to research it, know where to go find it later. And this is one of those things. I mean, Docker seems incredibly cool. To me, I'd love to have a conversation with a Docker expert, because it's still, to me, why would you build for something other than PaaS if you're building a greenfield thing? And why would you be building for the concept of virtual machines?
Yeah, it feels like one sort of level of abstraction away from that, right?
It does. It feels like a level between IaaS and between PaaS, but it's kind of like, why would you not go with PaaS anyway?
I guess more portable, maybe. You build a Docker app or an app that uses Docker, and then you can shift that around between providers and hosters and things that support Docker. I don't know.
That's one of the arguments people make. But I guess, you know, how many times would you actually say, oh, we're getting all of our stuff off of AWS and switching over to Azure or vice versa?
But maybe it's not switching. Maybe it's a little bit of both. Maybe it's saying,
oh, hedging.
Hey, we could build an app that runs in both, and we can do, you know, smart things like price-based loading, you know, running it the most cheaply across the two, or if one's having a service incident or some issue, then switch to the other. Or I don't know. I think I'm not deeply knowledgeable in this space, but you could split your app between places too. And I guess it would help with that, not having to restructure things for one versus the other, maybe. I don't know.
That's true. I was curious.
We should get somebody on the show to talk, like some nerdy Docker dude who could come and talk about some of the reasons why you'd want to do this.
That'd be a good time to go one of our episodes to talk to somebody at Build.
Yeah, well, there's that. I've also got a buddy of mine who works at Google on this stuff that we could see if we could get on the show.
Oh, we absolutely should do that.
Because I know they're big in this stuff too.
Ah, very cool.
I've got another one about machine learning. Mm. So this is all about big number crunching. And so Microsoft officially launches Azure Machine Learning Platform. This was at the Strata conference last week, I believe it was, maybe around February 18th, something along those lines. And the Azure Machine Learning service moved into general availability. So it's about big data processing in the cloud. And again, this is not something I've had a chance to play with yet, but to me, this seems like, you know, you've had Hadoop has been big in this area in the past, or is still obviously big in this area. And this is all about like, becomes all the more important with like Internet of Things, and you've got a ton of more and more data in organizations and signals coming in from devices and from customers and from parts of your organization. And often you want to be able to find insights in that data really, really quickly, and that this is all aimed towards doing that. And so from the reading I've done on this, you can start capturing that data basically by creating a set of APIs in Azure Machine Learning. And so data gets sent into those APIs, as I understand it, and then it can scale and do massive real-time crunching on that data as it's inbound ingestion, I guess. It's a term I made up. And you can build those APIs with a few clicks with things like, there's a language called R, which apparently is really popular in the space, and also Python is another one really popular for data scientists. And so you go build your APIs, start sending it data, and you build out your apps that way. You can crunch through numbers really, really quick and find insights. Now, the other interesting thing they've done is they've also launched a marketplace type or a store type thing for these apps. And so if one data scientist comes up with a really kick-ass, like the example they show in one of the screenshots that we'll link to is telco customer churn. And so somebody might, you know, go create an app that that is able to do really interesting calculations on customer churn, and then they can share that app with others as well through this sort of marketplace of applications and APIs that they've created. So that's pretty cool. So if you could imagine, like, for us, as an example, right? Like, we're not data scientists and we're not really deep on analysis of customer churn or, you know, classification of different types of data and things. And so we could go find somebody who is in that marketplace, find an app that they've built to help calculate this stuff rather than us having to learn it ourselves, then write the apps, but and then go use it to crunch data that we might have.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, it's a very big growth area in the cloud space, seemingly infinite scale. So being able to tackle some really big problems. It's like you said, I haven't had a chance to play with this either. I think it's one of those things that you kind of have to have a really good use case for doing it. You kind of have to live in this space.
Yeah. You got to have a boatload of data from somewhere.
Yeah. And so it's kind of, I mean, and when you say a boatload, I mean, we're talking like a lot of stuff. And so it's, you know, I like to talk to somebody who's actually, you know, dealing with these kinds of problems. And what were you doing before? And what does this do for you that you couldn't do before? And how does it make what you were doing before easier?
Hey, I've got this is a little more close to home scenario. What if, like, imagine getting like terabytes and terabytes of data, like signal processing data off a Formula One car.
Ooh.
They've got loads of sensors. They could go crunch all of that number, you know, throw it all in here, crunch it all down. And then they mention being able to visualize, you know, once you've done a bunch of this analysis, you obviously want to see the results. And so doing things with Power BI to visualize data and things like that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah, it would be very cool.
Nice. What else we got?
A little one right here is that there's a group called, for those of you who aren't familiar with this, there's something called Y Combinator or YC. And what it is that it's there's a guy by the name...
Paul Graham.
Paul Graham, thank you. he's not involved with it anymore, actually, but he was kind of like the big guy behind it. But the idea is that you apply, think of it like a super incubator for startups. And so you would apply to get into a Y Combinator
intake.
Yeah. I can't remember what they call them, but it's like, you come into, like, think of it like a seminar, like an intake, and you have certain milestones you have to meet. You kind of go, you have access to all of these different resources while you're inside. A lot of really big companies, a lot of popular companies have come out of this. So it's a pretty big, when it usually makes some good news in the startup space where you see who got accepted into Y Combinator and what stuff is actually out there that comes out from them. So the news about this, though, is that Microsoft secured a deal or an arrangement with Y Combinator that they are now giving $500,000, $500,000, worth of Azure credits for Y Combinator startups. And it's not just the Azure stuff that I think that they get, is it?
No, they also get 3 years of Office 365.
That's a pretty big deal too.
You know, it just takes the hassle out of figuring out where you're going to host your mail and put your documents and all that malarkey.
Yeah.
And, you know, gets them Office and does all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I think that you think about it, it's a $500,000 worth of credit goes a long way. And
that's like two Godzilla VMs, right?
Exactly, yeah. So what's interesting about it, though, too, is that you see this is becoming more and more, it's becoming more and more appealing to a lot of people. Like, I listened to the .NET Rocks podcast with Carl Franklin and Richard Campbell, and they do this thing where they have a deal with one of their sponsors where they give away a $5,000 package to one of their listeners. Or sorry, they give a subscription away to one of their listeners, and then every year they give away $5,000 worth of stuff in December. And then they turn around after the little advertisement, they look at the guest and they say, the guest of the show, and they say, if you had $5,000 to spend on technology, what would you spend it on? And it's interesting because you're starting to hear a couple people start to say when they're on there going, I'd want $5,000 worth of Azure credit. Right, just to, what could you do with it? I mean, I know that that's definitely one of the things that I would consider using some of my $5,000 for is to doing this. So $500,000 is, I mean, that's a lot of just free hosting, essentially, for a company to get up and running. And not just free hosting, but you could throw a ton of resources at something, at a problem that you're trying to solve, and maybe you're overscaling it. It's not an issue for you right off the bat.
No, absolutely. It just takes that away from the equation, right?
Absolutely. So what else you got for us?
Scott Goo had one of his absolute mega threads of new stuff. It came out on February 18th, and his blog post is called Azure Machine Learning Service, which we've covered, Hadoop Storm, Cluster Scaling, Linux Support, Site Recovery, and more, which is...
understatement.
Understatement of the century. I'm just gobsmacked. Like, it's another mega release of stuff. everything from things going into GA, but new things being added. And we won't be able to do it justice in the podcast today, but we'll touch on a few of these things.
Or in the blog post.
And then people should go check it out in more detail. But there's a couple of really interesting ones that I thought we'd call out. One is SQL database announcements, website announcements, search announcements were the three ones that sort of piqued my interest. We've touched on the machine learning one already about GA, but everybody should go read the blog because it shows a couple of really cool examples of how to get started with machine learning and things. So definitely go read that. But moving on from that, we've got some other announcements that piqued my interest. The first one is SQL database and general availability of SQL database V12. And it comes with a few benefits. They say here, better management of large databases. Not having to deal with the 2 gig size limit of large indexes, I believe, was the large index size. Support for more programmability capabilities, so being able to do more T-SQL Windows functions and things like that for querying, more capabilities in the database engine itself. Up to 100 times performance improvements with support for in-memory column store queries for data mart and analytic workloads. Like, there must be some specific paths and specific types of queries where this really targets, and they must have optimized those paths pretty significantly to get up to 100 times performance. I'm sure you're not going to see that in just select name from users table that this relates to, but it sounds like it's more specific than that, but pretty cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Monitoring and troubleshooting stuff. And this new S3 performance level, which I thought was pretty hilarious given S3 is the name of Amazon's storage service. But this new S3 performance level, which says there's a new pricing option for SQL DBs called S3, which is sort of this new performance tier. You can pay more and get more perf out of your SQL DB, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So everything in the standard tier plus more.
Mm, very cool.
So that's pretty cool. And there's a few other bits and bobs in there, like some security feature pieces as well that will be interesting to folks that need those things like row-level security, dynamic data masking. Goodness knows what that is.
Mm.
And I haven't dug into that. And transparent data encryption, which sounds pretty interesting too.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of cool stuff in there. There's some of the other stuff that they announced too. This is one that when you're working in this cloud space, you suddenly find that you're needing something. And then out of the blue, you have this experience where you find that all of a sudden what you need miraculously shows up one day. And then you turn around and it's like, oh, hey, look, now they're announcing it. It's like, this is cool. So this happened to me in the last week. One of the things that they announced with websites is support for slot settings. So like for those people who are doing things like with ASP.NET, we're all familiar with web configs and how you can have app settings in your web configs. So in Azure, one of the things that you can do is have settings, but they will override anything that's in your web config. That's pretty cool because then you can go through the management portal and you can change things like your connection strings for databases or other kind of like keys and stuff that you use without having to do a redeployment of your code. You can just go in through the management portal and make your changes. So one of the other things that we can do with websites is that we can also have these things called deployment slots. And so you create a website, you have your main production slot, but then you may have additional slots that you want to create. So like, for example, I'll give you a real world case is that I'm working on something where I need two or three different slots. I have my production slot. I have one that is a staging slot. I have one that is and is also like a dev slot.
Yeah.
And so basically what it is that my staging slot is my production instance. And so what I have set up is I have my website set up to watch my GitHub account. And whenever it sees a commit to a specific branch, it runs a deployment, pulls a git over, and it actually does rolls all the code into my deployment slot. The trick is that I only want a subfolder of the source to be pulled in because you've got stuff in your that you're committing, which is like build and tests and all this other kind of stuff. But you've got the main production kind of build that you've done where you maybe done the minification of your JavaScript and CSS and all that kind of jazz. There's a way with this deployment process with Azure and the Git deployment is that you can actually put a property in the settings and tell it the path of the project. What do you want deployed into your website? So for example, for me, I've got a folder off the root called DST for my distribution.
Mm.
And I have one for production and I have one for staging and one for dev. Like the dev one doesn't have anything minified. The staging one is has a bunch of tests and everything to run in it. And then the production one is the one that I want to actually go live into production. And every time I'm doing, you know, work there, I've got a little automated process that's always building it and committing those things in. Well, one of the things that was a challenge is that I would have different slots would be tied to different branches. And so I'd have to set it up to where I had all of them always to point to the different repos, one repository for each of my different deployments, one for production, one for staging, one for dev. Because I couldn't have them all in one repo, because if I had them all pointing to the same, at one setting, it would always point for all the slots, it would point to one setting. Now I can have one setting, but it's a different value in that setting for each one of my different slots. So that now whenever I'm doing something in GitHub and I do a commit to it, it'll automatically pull into my staging slot and my dev slot all the changes. My production website does not have an automated deployment on it. I look to look at my staging, and when everything looks good, I just go swap the two folders, and then essentially it just takes my dev and my production and switches them over so that now I can test everything, but I manually have that flip the switch, let's go live with this.
Yeah.
So I was playing with this, and I was like, well, how am I going to fix this? I was in the middle of configuring it all to make it work for me, and then all of a sudden I go in and I see this little checkbox next to one of the settings that says, apply this one only to this deployment slot. I'm like, oh, that's what I wanted. That wasn't there yesterday.
Nice. I love it when that happens. Especially when you discover it yourself and you're like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Hey, one final one I've got here is around API management. I don't know if people have played with this before, but as a bit of background, there's an API management service in Azure, which is basically a... you could think of it as like a middleman between the apps out there in the real world and your backend APIs that those things call. And so it acts as a sort of a middleman between those two things. And it does some interesting stuff like API metering and usage monitoring and in a very API-friendly fashion, right? So it's not just like Google Analytics type style page views and what have you. It's very specific about the APIs in your application, and it's tailored to API usage and things like that. And that's been out for a little while. That's not new. But they've recently added, or in this announcement, a new premium tier for API management. One of the things in the past was you had to pick a region where your API management service was deployed, but you could only pick one. And now the premium tier lets you pick multiple geographies for deployment. So you've got some redundancy there as well, you know, which obviously helps. You can't be having a single point of failure in your app, then you're going to need multi-geography deployment. You're going to deploy to multiple geographies, I should say. I've looked into it initially when it started coming out, and it looked pretty interesting, definitely from insights into what's going on in your application. You know, say for a phone app communicating with a web API behind the scenes, you want to catch that set of usage and telemetry. And this is a great way to do it without having to instrument your code and your API itself. It sort of passes it through to your API and catches all of the telemetry along the way. So that should be super useful for people that are either building public APIs or just want better insights into their own APIs behind their apps. So multiple geography deployments, obviously super important for people. And also the other interesting one that I thought was cool was Azure AD integration. So if you want to secure the use of it, you can tie it to your Azure Active Directory for external identities. And management of who can get in that way too, which is kind of nice.
That's definitely very nice. So another one that we saw here was around improvements to the Document DB service, which is the NoSQL JSON-based databases that we have in Azure. Two easy ones they went through, and they did added some new regions to it. So they've added in, they used to have US West, East Europe, and West Europe. And now we have, in addition to those, we have US East, Southeast Asia, and East Asia. And then they also bumped up the larger size accounts and for documents that you can do. So they bumped up the maximum size of an individual document from 256K up to 512, so twice the size. And the limit per account was raised from 5 all the way up to 50, which means you can now scale a DocumentD account from up to 500 gigabytes in a storage and about 100,000 requests of provision throughput. So huge changes there to the size. Another thing they did too with this is they did added something called SQL parameterization to queries. So we've had this with SQL Server, where you can use like the standard at notation We can now do the same thing inside of the DocumentDB style queries, which means you can also use things like anything that's a valid JSON string. So you could use in your queries. So you could use strings, numbers, booleans, but you can even now use like arrays or nested JSON objects in your queries, which is pretty cool. So big, big improvements there.
Yeah, good stuff in the NoDB space, right? Or NoSQL space.
Yeah, tons of stuff there. So, and a lot of the things too around like search improvements and stuff, but a lot of those last few things we were doing were all coming from Scott Goo's blog. So definitely go take a look.
Very cool. Oh yeah, I guess we should touch on portal improvements as well. You noticed it last week or this week. Some changes to the way the portals, you know, new features coming in the portal and stuff like that that we noticed start rolling out, which was always appreciated, right? Getting new features in the portal to help manage your assets and manage your things you've got in there. So that's pretty sweet too.
Yeah. Hoping at Build, we see that this preview portal that we have, if we can kind of push forward this, having two different portals is starting to get to be a bit of a chore.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, having to switch between them for things sucks.
Yeah. Cool. That's a whole lot of Azure news that we had this week.
Booyah. Yeah.
Awesome.
They're on fire.
I'd love to see how big that organization is. I don't know of any other org that ships features, new features that are this epic and this big, this fast.
Yeah. I was in a meeting yesterday with Scott Goo, and I really wanted to drag him aside and was like, bro, how do you do it? Nailing it.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
I was a little starstruck, I got to say. So I know it's nerdy and funny, but yeah, I contained myself and didn't embarrass myself and pin him against a wall and give him the 50 million questions. Have you heard of our pod show?
He'd be a fun one to get on the show.
Oh, we should get him on the show. That'd be hilarious. What a scoop that would be.
Oh my God, that'd be really cool. Well, hey man, another show, another week.
Yeah, thank you all very much for listening. Like we should actually do a bit of a stats update at some point and who's listening and we haven't looked at that for a little while. So it'd be funny if we were just talking to ourselves.
Chris O'Brien last week said he actually listens to us on his run. So I don't know if he listens to us on the run or if we give him, never mind. Give him the run. No, we
shouldn't. Motivation to run. No.
There we go.
Yeah, well, I've had a bunch of people come up and say they listen. So that's always fun. So send us your feedback. Always welcome.
Absolutely. All right, man.
That's great feedback.
Yeah. That's a Microsoft tagline. Cloud first, mobile first. That's great feedback.
Oh, yeah.
All right, man. I will leave you to it. We got to get back to work.
Yeah, cheers, buddy. Have a good one.
Take care. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.